Blog Talk Radio.
Exodus 32, we have the event of the creation of the golden calf. And so chapter 32, verse 2, Moses answered them, "Take off the gold rings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me." So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron. Now remember, Aaron is the brother of Moses. He took what they handed him and made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods," that is your Elohim, or your Elohim of, O Israel, "who brought you up out of Egypt." In the time of Moses and Aaron, particularly in Egypt, bulls embodied the great Egyptian gods Ptah and Ra, female deities, and they were understood as livestock animals. Apis was the most important of the Egyptian sacred bulls, and Yahweh destroyed this false deity in the fifth judgment. There would be no religious syncretism or the uniting of the worship of Apis with the worship of Yahweh. This was completely rejected. Also in the pyramid text, the Egyptians called the Nile River by the name Hapi. She had a beard, breasts, and a hanging stomach. So I want you to see the interrelationship that Egypt had with both the combining of male-female deities and the impact that this had upon the making of the golden calf. Verse 5 of chapter 32 reads, "When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, 'Tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord.'" Now, you see how misguided Aaron is. Moses, in verse 15, turned and went down the mountain because Moses was in fellowship with God, receiving the 10 words from God, or what we call the 10 commandments. Moses turned and went down the mountain with the two tablets of the testimony, very important word, in his hand. They were inscribed on both sides, front and back. The tables were the work of God. The writing was the writing of God, engraved on the tabernacles. Now, we call the Ten Commandments a law stated in the imperative, that is, law from which there is no recourse. And so you see how ancient the technology of written symbols are within this text. Let us go on. Verse 17, "When Joshua heard the noise of the people shouting, he said to Moses, 'There is the sound of war in the camp.' Moses replied, 'It is not the sound of war, or the sound of victory. It is not the sound of defeat. It is the sound of singing that I hear.' When Moses approached the camp, he saw the calf and the dancing. His anger burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hands, breaking them to pieces at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf they had made and burned it in the fire, and then ground it to powder and scattered it on the water and made the Israelites to drink it. He said to Aaron," that is to the leader, or the one who was left in charge while he was away, "he said to Aaron, 'What did these people do to you that you led them into such a great sin?'" Moses holds Aaron accountable. Notice what Aaron does, or his response to Moses. Verse 22, "Do not be angry, my lord," Aaron answered. "You know how prone these people are to evil." And so now Moses, Aaron distances himself from accountability. He goes on. "They said to me, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses who brought us up out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him." And so now Aaron plays the blame game. So, verse 24, "I told them, whoever has any gold jewelry, take it off. Then they gave me the gold, and I threw it into the fire, and out came this calf." So now Aaron moves into a magical explanation, totally exonerating himself from what has transpired. Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control, and so become a laughingstock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance of the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. Now get the scene. Moses had been in fellowship with God to receive the 10 words. Moses returns, and the one who is left in charge has led the people into sin. That is idolatrous worship. And now the camp is contaminated with the presence of sin. Moses is now asking those who want to follow God to depart from this sinful scene. That is, separate themselves from this particular scene and event. See, there are those who really do love God, and they want to serve God the way God says that he should be served. Moses has asked for a separation to take place, and then those who do not follow the word of the Lord, in verse 29, notice what Moses says. Then Moses said, "You have been set apart to the Lord today, for you were against your own sons and brothers, and he has blessed you this day." See, sin destroys relationships. And I know sin is an old-fashioned word. And I have read many articles in psychology and in psychotherapy, and I have looked very carefully at the different schools of psychotherapy and their answers as to how to address what goes on within the human condition. And I enjoy reading the diagnostic instruments, and the assessments are very accurate, and there are assessments as a pastoral counselor that I use and that help me to help those with whom I speak and counsel. But there are inherent limitations in each instrument for certain reasons. The Bible brings to the table, that is the biblical documents, another epistemology, an epistemology or way of knowing that helps to open up. It is another understanding of the human condition. And so Moses has decided that he is going to follow God. He will separate himself from sinful action. That is, sin is lack of conformity to the character of God. And whether it be an act, disposition, or thought. And so the people have followed mental attitude sin. And Aaron was a part of this behavior. Verse 30, the next day Moses said to the people, "You have committed a great sin, but now I will go up to the Lord. Perhaps I can make atonement or covering for your sin." So Moses went back to the Lord and said, "Oh, what a great sin these people have committed. They have made themselves Elohim of gold. But now please forgive their sin. But if not, then blot me out of the book you have written." That is the book of life. This is an extraordinary statement on the part of Moses. He is willing to surrender eternal life for himself on behalf of the people who has sinned before God. He asks, he's requested of God, "Blot me out of your book." Verse 33, the Lord replied to Moses, "Whoever has sinned against me, I will blot out of my book. Now go, lead the people to the place I spoke of, and my angel will go before you. However, when the time comes for me to punish, I will punish them for their sin." And the Lord struck the people with a plague because of what they did. Now notice, people are made accountable for their actions. God does not psychodynamically look back into their past or what events transpired in their past lives in order to impact them for their current behavior. God has delivered them with power from enslavement under Pharaoh. God has shown them a new way by deliverance at the Sea of Reeds, by parting the Sea of Reeds and allowing them to escape Pharaoh's pursuing army. They walked across on dry land. They have experienced the miraculous at the deliverance of the Red Sea. Miriam takes up a tambourine, she and the other women, and they praise God and they call him a man of war or the divine warrior. So they have substantive information at their disposal. They have substantive evidence about who God is in their lives. They have experienced first person his power. They know the power of God. And yet, what is lacking is an understanding of taking that experience of the power of God and allowing it to guide one's thinking, one's cognitive perceptions of events and reality. And so here you see that this is, it goes beyond being merely a cognitive issue. It is an issue of the heart. That is, the heart needs to be radically changed. the Lord, and so in chapter, we move to chapter 33, verse 1, then the Lord said to Moses, leave this place, you and the people you brought up out of Egypt, and go up to the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I will send an angel before you to drive out the Canaanites, the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Go up to the land flowing with milk and honey, but I will not go with you. Now, the situation has radically changed. The people knew the presence of God had been with them as a cloud by day, protecting them in their desert trek from the 120-degree heat of the sun during the day. The cloud covered them during the day so that they would not fall down because of the sweltering heat. God took care of them and met their needs. Their sandals did not wear out. Their clothes did not fall off. They had adequate nutritional needs. They were taken care of by God. God provided water on the way, direction. God gave them comfort. And at night, a pillar of fire reassured them of the presence of God in their lives. They were indeed a blessed people. But now, God says, because sin had contaminated the camp, God said, I will not go with you. And then God gives a reason in verse 3, but I will not go with you because you are a stiff-necked people, and I might destroy you on the way. When the people heard these distressing words, they began to mourn. They, up to this point, they had enjoyed the blessings of God. But what are material things? What are the blessings of God without the giver? They have enjoyed his gifts, and now we will see who merely wants the gifts of God and who do not want a relationship with the giver. Well, look very carefully, because the people mourn. They not only want the gifts of God, they want the giver. They want a relationship. They want fellowship. They don't want to lose his presence in their lives. And notice, they began to mourn, and no one put on any ornaments. It was not the time to decorate their flesh. It was now the time to earnestly seek God. It was a time of releasing those things of the flesh, because now they would understand that they needed God. Verse 5, for the Lord said to Moses, tell the people, you are a stiff-necked people. If I were to go with you even for a moment, I might destroy you. Now take off your ornaments. That is an act that is required. And I will decide what to do with you. So the Israelites stripped off their ornaments at Mount Horeb. Now Moses used to take a tent and pitch it outside the camp some distance away, calling it the tent of meeting. Moses was to design and to build the tabernacle, but at this time it had not yet been built. Moses takes his own tent and turns it into a tent of meeting, far away from the camp. Moses does this spontaneous, decisive act because he needed to take action not only on his behalf, but on behalf of the people of God. This is radical. This is decisive. This is spontaneous. Moses wanted God to know that he wanted God. People, and notice, anyone inquiring of the Lord would go to the tent of meeting outside the camp. God met with Moses, and God spoke to Moses. Verse 11, we read, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face as a man speaks with his friend. Then Moses would return to the camp, but his young aide, Joshua, the son of Nun, did not leave the tent. Moses requests a deeper audience with God. Verse 12, you have been telling me, leave these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, I know you by name. Verse 13, if you are pleased with me, teach me your ways so that I may know you and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people. Verse 14, the Lord replied, that is Yahweh replied, my presence, literally in the Hebrew, my faces, plural, my faces will go with you. And I will give you rest. This, of course, is symbolic language. And God, or Yahweh, is telling Moses that his faces, that is, whatever need is presented along the way, God will provide for him. Moses is reassured about the presence of God by the language of his faces. Notice the grace of God, that even when his own people have been in active rebellion against him, have this significant sin that has been committed in his presence, God, still because of his heart and who he is, moves out to give reassurance to the leader of his people that his faces will go with them. That is, whatever need arises, God would be there to meet that need in a particular manner. For us too, God gives us the assurance of his faces. When I have joy in my heart, I experience, as it were, the face of God. When I am in grief, I experience the face of God in a different manner. He will never leave us nor forsake us. When I need the presence of God, because I may be depressed, or I may beseech his face on behalf of another, I go before God as an intercessor, the way Moses is doing now. A very bold and importunate intercessor. God is there to meet the need. And so God is giving Moses a very compelling interview with himself. Verse 17, and the Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you have asked because I am pleased with you and I know you by name. God enters into that relationship with Moses. Now, I want to show Moses more of his kabod, that is, his glory. This experience will serve to enter into the heart of Moses in a very powerful way and transform this leader who has asked God to make himself known to him that he may grab on, as it were, to who God is, to be blessed with the reassurance that the power of God and the presence of God would be there for him and both he and his people. God bless you this morning. Go before him. Ask God to give you an audience with himself that you might experience his wonderful presence. I am your host, Dr. Josiah Rich. I'll meet with you next time on the Matter of Talk.